Good afternoon and welcome. It's midday. Thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Hall here in Studio A, and my guest is Baltimore City Police Commissioner Richard Worley. Crime rates for almost every category are down in Baltimore. With less than 3 weeks to go in the calendar year, our city is on track to have the fewest number of homicides in nearly 50 years. One category that hasn't gone down is so-called petty theft, which includes the stealing of packages after they've been delivered to homes and shoplifting from stores. Commissioner Worley himself was the victim of a porch pirate at his home. And a new survey from LendingTree finds that more than one in four people admit to stealing at self-checkout kiosks in stores. Last month, city police and federal agents arrested three people in Park Heights suspected of being involved in multiple incidents of drug overdoses in the Penn North neighborhood. In that raid, according to WBAL television, officials confiscated 28 grams of heroin and fentanyl, as well as cutting agents, pill pressers, a digital scale, and other tools indicating that drugs were being manufactured in that home. Baltimore City Police Commissioner Richard Worley joins me here in Studio A. You are welcome to join us as well. Our number 410-662-8780. You can send us an email midday at WIPR.org. Commissioner, it's good to see you. Welcome back.
Good to see you. Thank you for having me, and congratulations on your new role as the senior news analyst, and thank you for hosting Midday for 10 years.
Well, I appreciate it, and that's going to start sometime after the first of the year, and we'll see how that goes.
So, good for you.
And I always appreciate your willingness to be here on the show here at Midday. I want to start by asking you how you're feeling. You took a tumble.
I did.
In September, and, you know, stuff takes a long time to heal these days.
So. Yeah, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I'm completely recovered from that, but on that same night I was playing baseball and ruptured my bicep tendon, so now I had to get that surgically repaired in October, and did not realize, I knew it was a six-month recovery, but I thought, I'm a little hard-headed, I thought I could do it sooner, but my doctor's like, 6 months is 6 months, so can't lift anything heavier than a coffee cup for 6 months, so I'm looking forward to April 20th.
April 20th, that's the same. You've determined that on April 20th, you'll be back in the gym pulling weights.
That's
huh?
My next appointment is April 20th. He's like, I'll clear you, and you can go do whatever you want on April 20th.
Tell us briefly about the raid that resulted in the arrests of people up in Park Heights that appear to be connected to the overdoses that have happened on two occasions, multiple people overdosing over in Penn North.
Yeah, that's part of it's still part of an ongoing investigation, so I can't get into it too much because it's not complete. But we've done some search and seizure warrants at a few houses, and we've got some ties to Penn North, but we still have a lot of work to do there, and we're going to continue to push until we find out who actually gave those drugs to those individuals. And it's just our job is to dismantle and take down the drug dealers, and that's what we're going to try to do. Penn North is extremely challenging because it's been problematic for many years, but these mass overdoses were really tragic. Thankfully, for those, no one passed, and we can just continue to work to try to hold those accountable. But we still have some work to do because it's a very intensive and long process for the investigation.
And of course, multiple agencies are getting involved in the response there. I mean, there is now Narcan is available, which is the antidote to opioid overdose, available in like a vending machine in the subway station.
Yes, that is a miracle drug. It has saved so many lives. And to see it work is amazing. It's many years ago that I saw it work. Someone we thought was going to pass from an overdose, in 2 or 3 minutes, he's standing up yelling and screaming at you because you took away his high, and they walk away. I'm like, wow, that was the first time I saw it. I was actually in the Penn North neighborhood because that was part of my post.
And so police officers now all carry Narcan,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
So when they encounter somebody who's in that kind of distress, so again, you can't help somebody with their addiction if they're not alive. You got to keep them alive, and Narcan does that. Let's talk also about what folks gleefully refer to as porch piracy. We've heard stories about people actually following the Amazon trucks, the UPS trucks, the FedEx trucks. They leave the stuff on people's porches, and then the minute the truck goes away, there's somebody up there scooping them up. That even happened to you at your home.
It did.
Yeah.
It did. Yeah, you just have to I'm lucky because where I live, I'm on a main street, but you have to walk kind of up a hill to get to our house. But we have a Ring camera, and we weren't home at the time, but we happened to be at my mother-in-law's, and I hear it go off, and I look at it. My wife goes, "Who's that?" I was like, "Somebody's stealing a package." And she goes, "No, it's not." I was like, "Well, who else is?" He came around and tried to go sideways, but I'm lucky enough that I had a picture of it, and I was able to send it to the officers working that area. They did find him. He didn't have our package because it wasn't very valuable. It was a bowl that my wife ordered, so he probably tossed it in the woods or something. But he did have packages from two other homes. And I would recommend, please, if someone is stealing something from you, prosecute them, because the other two victims really didn't want to go forward with it. And this individual had multiple thefts in his past. So we need to hold those accountable that are doing that, or they're just, if there's no consequences, they're going to continue to do it. But I would recommend getting packages delivered to an Amazon box, because if it's sitting on your steps, on our steps, and it's not easy to get there. My wife ordered one of those like mailboxes now, so we can put the packages in them and
yeah. So you can go to secure. Sometimes you can go to a Whole Foods store. Right. You can go to an Amazon delivery station.
Yes.
FedEx has the same thing. You can go pick packages up at a FedEx location and UPS and whatnot, because it is a difficult problem. There's a company called Safewise, which is a home security company, and they published a poll, which I think should be taken with a grain of salt, because it's in their best interest to make people think that the world is a very dangerous place. But they, you know, they talk about a 67% increase in package thefts nationwide, with people figuring out that this is a viable way of making a nefarious living. The Ring cameras really do work, and that you have a video record of who's ever at your front door.
Yes, and it's good. It's evidence, but if we can't get to them relatively quick, it makes it difficult unless they come back and continue to do the same areas. But we'll do our best to catch them. We look for people walking down the street carrying packages, and that don't look like. Officers just have to use their discretion. As far as just stopping and questioning people. But we know some areas where we've had some issues with packages being stolen. But I would just say to have things delivered to a box or something, or purchase one of those secure boxes. Ours, that's what my wife bought. She bought the thing where they open it up, drop it in, and we have to open like a mailbox to get the stuff out.
But that's at your home.
That's at our home.
So you don't have to go anywhere.
No, we don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah,
so.
Well, for a while, I know the police department was handing out Ring cameras in certain neighborhoods.
Yes.
For free.
Yeah, yes.
So people could get that. Is that program still in
place? No, that's not still going on. That was kind of like to initiate it in some neighbor. I think we were up in the Park Heights area
mm-hmm.
when we started that. That was working with Ring to get those out there. And it is a great tool because you have someone's picture. You have the picture forever. And we had, like with us, same with us, we had to download the picture to the our report. And we did all that, my wife did all that online.
Yeah.
And so that we have it as evidence when it goes to court.
Because larceny, petty theft, whatever you call it, is really the only category of crime that we're seeing a bit of a spike. And that includes shoplifting from stores. What are the merchants telling you about what's going on with that? Because that's clearly up. You can feel it because you go into a CVS or something and you can't buy a tube of toothpaste without having an associate of the store open a locked cabinet for you to access
it. Yeah, it's the same thing. Okay. And you get a lot of, this isn't even a juvenile problem. This is a problem of every age. But you do have our young people go in and steal things. And quite honestly, there's not a whole lot of prosecution being done with the younger people that are just doing petty thefts. Until they graduate to something more serious. But the merchants are, we will come to your business and tell you how to make things less likely to be stolen. Anything by the door, we ask you to move it. because people can grab it and go right out the door. If they are taking something, and I know this is really difficult to do because it'd be difficult for me as a business owner, is you're better off letting them take it instead of trying to stop them because they may have a gun. It results, we see those things result in people getting assaulted all the time. And then what was happening is we would spend a lot of time as officers processing, going to court, and then the business owner or the victim wouldn't come to court, and then the case goes out. So what we started doing is we will give the business owner the information, and they have to pursue the charges because they're the victim. And we want to pursue those charges so that we can hold these individuals accountable, because if not, they'll just continue to do what they've been doing with the shoplifting. But our guys are extremely, extremely good at catching them. Once we catch them, we'll either give them a citation, they don't have identification, we arrest them. And that's the only way to combat it. But it is the one area that is up. And I would say that the stealing items off of the porch pirates, I think those numbers are probably up because the amount of things being ordered online is up.
Because it's holidays, yes. First of all, and people are just shopping online more frequently anyway.
It's so convenient. You go to I was at the mall the other day, and it was kind of vacant. There's not a whole lot of people in it. Usually Christmas time, it's packed.
Sure. And, you know, everything's relative. According to the Council on Criminal Justice, which tracks this sort of thing, in the first half of this year, 2025, robberies were 30% lower than they were in the first half of 2019 prior to COVID. So you can, you know, pick your data point, pick what you want to compare to. But robberies are different than larcenies, right? Yes. Robberies are to your person, right?
Yes. It's got a robbery has to be something where you're attempting or taking something from somebody by the use of force or the threat of force, and then it becomes a robbery. For example, the shoplifting. If the owner tries to stop the person going out of the door and the person pushes them, that becomes a robbery.
So a larceny becomes a robbery.
Correct.
Yeah. But you can come up with all sorts of speculation as to why this is happening. But there was a poll done, and forgive me, I don't have it right in front of me who did it, but saying that 27% of people are now admitting to stealing things at self-checkout kiosks. And that's up from 15% just a couple of years ago. Do you have any data? Do you have any reason? Do you have any explanation for why it keeps increasing? I know when you go to the self-checkout, I use the self-checkout at the grocery store all the time. It's very convenient. Mm-hmm. You can buy stuff, and you get a little gun there that they give you, and you beep it, and it's all in the bag when you get there, and you just, you know, you pay the bill and you leave. It's fast. But every so often they audit you. Every so often they come over and they just check, you know, 8 or 9 items to make sure that you're not throwing stuff in the bag, mm-hmm. that you're not beeping. Do you have any particular reason, or are merchants telling you any reason that people are abusing that system more often now than they used to?
No, I don't have it. You know, I mean, I would be speculating if I were to guess. I would probably say it's because the cost of items have increased so
stuff
dramatically
is more expensive.
That people are resorting to taking something instead of paying for it.
The violent crime rate, though, is considerably lower. 300 people as of today have been victims of non-fatal shootings. Last year, 394 people were victims of non-fatal shootings. That's nearly 100 fewer people getting shot. And our violent crime homicide rate at 128 now, that's down from 184 people at the same time last year. And last year was lower than the year before. Again, what are the experts saying the reason for that is? Because Baltimore, thankfully, isn't the only city that's experiencing that. You see this in cities around the country. There's been a steady decline. Why do you think that's happening? Are we getting better at policing it? Are we getting better at solving it? What's going on?
I think what you're seeing nationwide is a trend that kind of comes and goes throughout history. But what you're seeing in Baltimore is we're far exceeding those percentages. I equate back to 2022. 2022, we had 688 people shot, and we had 333 murders. We're over 200 murders less than we had then. And I equate it to the great work of first the men and women of the BPD have done a fabulous job with all of our partners, the group violence reduction strategy. We have an opportunity this year. We started keeping homicide numbers in 1970, and the lowest number recorded is 171 in 1977. And we sit at 128 today. We have a chance to break that record, but 128 is still too many. We want to get that down even further. But you talk about homicides and shootings, but our robberies are down. Our robberies are down significantly. 36% down in carjackings. Robberies overall are down 29%. And I think what happens is you start to see our criminals are not dumb. They start to commit robberies. We start tracking them and catching them. Then they move on to street robberies. They were doing carjackings, then street robberies. Now we're having some issues with burglaries. That's kind of flutters running about even, but the important thing.
And a burglary is when they break into your home.
Correct. And there's no force. They just break in and take things or your business.
Mm-hmm.
But our burglary clearance rate is 30%, which is double the national average. Homicide clearance rate is around 64. And our non-fatal shooting, I think, was at 42 or 43. 42. And that's above the national average for homicides. And our burglary, like I said, is double the national average. So our men and women with our partners are working extremely hard to bring these numbers down. But we've also had a lot of technological advances. We have one of the best crime labs in the country. And we do a lot of our work right in our own crime lab. We can get shell casing, Nibin leads, which tells us that if casings are related to other shootings, back in 24 to 48 hours that other agencies have to send out to a national, to ATF or someone like that to do the leads on. So it's something that we've been working extremely hard. I think all of the men and women that we have are working hard, but I think it's the first time, I believe, since I've been commissioner, and I think I have in operations, everybody in the right seat, and then you just put smarter people than you in seats and you let them do their job, and that's what they've been doing, and things are going really well. But we couldn't do it without all of our federal, state, and local partners.
And, you know, the clearance rate is something, I mean, you and I have talked about this. I talked about this with your predecessor, Mike Harrison, many times. The rates, you know, often hovered in the high 30s to low 40s, which meant, you know, 6 out of 10 people were literally getting away with murder. Now we're above 6 out of 10 getting caught, but that's still 4 out of 10 getting away with it. So, I mean, it could always get better. But, again, the clearance rate has a lot to do with a lot of different factors. What do you attribute the fact that your clearance rates are so much better these days?
Well, just to talk about what you just, 2023, 34% homicide clearance rate. As of today, it's 64%. I always want to say the great work of the men and women of BPD. We've got some great homicide detectives, but what you also see is they have the time to investigate the homicides more now and the shootings more now because they're not investigating as many. But the biggest thing that I think is that we're not only that, but it coincides with 32% more Metro Crime Stoppers tips. So the public...
So the community is stepping up in a way perhaps they had not stepped up in before.
Yes, we're getting more and more cooperation from the community. And I think that goes back to all the work
and
training.
There's been a consent decree, of course, for the past, you know, 8 years.
Yes. Yeah. All the work and training that we've put into making our officers guardians instead of warriors, and the community policing that we've used, all those things I think are helping to lower the crime rate and to help us with our clearance rate. And we have a great relationship with the state's attorney. So the attorney general, we just did a takedown that's going to go with the attorney general and our U.S. attorneys. And everyone is working together to make Baltimore safer.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the relationships between various agencies and the state's attorney and the BPD. Baltimore City Police Commissioner Richard Worley is my guest. We'll have more with the commissioner after a quick break. You're welcome to join us then, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, sports writer and baseball fanatic Jane Levy talks about her plan to restore her favorite sport to its rightful place as America's true pastime. Plus, a theater review with J. Wynn Russick will talk about Santa Claus Is Coming, which is at Baltimore Center Stage. So that's coming up tomorrow. If you've just joined us today, my guest is Baltimore City Police Commissioner Richard Worley. To join our conversation, we're at 410-662-8780 or midday at WIPR.org if you want to drop us an email. So we talked, Commissioner, just before the break about the relationship between BPD, the state's attorney's office, the U.S. attorney, all the different agencies, federal, state, local, working together. There was a letter that our state's attorney here in Baltimore, Ivan Bates, sent to the mayor a couple weeks ago complaining about MONSEE, the Mayor's Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement, which the mayor credits, and you and I have talked about, you've credited as well, with being a really strong dimension of why this group violence reduction strategy has been successful. And as we were saying before the break, you know, the numbers don't lie. I mean, there's just fewer people getting murdered and shot. What's your take on what's going on between the state's attorney and the mayor, and how is it going to affect the group effort, the holistic approach to continuing the good news about crime reduction?
First, I don't think it's going to affect it at all. I think eventually they will come together. They will settle their differences, whatever they may be. But I think the fact that this was a time when we should be celebrating, I don't want to say celebrating the lower numbers because numbers are still high, but the city is having a really good year with our crime numbers. And it even overshadowed our council hearing the other day, where this is our oversight hearing for our council hearing with Councilman Conway, and the majority of the conversation.
He's the head of the Public Safety Commission.
The majority of the conversation was about these letters going back and forth between the mayor and the state's attorney and the open air drug market, and not talking about the great work that all of our partners have done with the BPD and with all of our federal, state, and local partners to make Baltimore a much safer place in 2025 than it was in 2024 and 2023. And I think the timing of it was kind of disappointing for me, because now we're talking about something other than everyone having a good year together and finishing out 2025 and moving into 2026. But I look at it as a sports team, a family. There's going to be disagreements between people. They'll work it out. We're all part of one team. We all want the same thing for Baltimore, and I think that'll be fixed. I just disappointed in that it affected the hearing and some of the great work that's being done throughout the city, because it's put a lot of attention on something that will be worked out.
What about the assertions that the state's attorney made in the letter, having to do with lack of transparency on the part of MONSEE? And the BPD's relationship with MONSEE, how would you characterize that? I mean, Safe Streets in particular was singled out by the state's attorney in this letter, and other people have complained that the fact that Safe Streets doesn't work hand in glove with the police department limits it. There are people who think that it's limited. And then there are others who say, well, if they were working with the police department, the credibility is shot and they wouldn't be able to talk to the folks in the way that they're able to do. So there's two sides of that coin. What's your take on how it's evolved through this consent decree, through the numbers that have been improving?
I think we're at a great place for the whole strategy. I just think this feud will go away, and we'll continue to do the things we're doing. I have a great relationship with MONSEE and Stephanie Mavronis.
She's the head of the mayor's office.
It's designed so that the Safe Streets doesn't have a really tight relationship with the police department, because then it does take away their credibility in the community. So and I don't have a whole lot of contact with them. My people don't have a whole lot of contact with them, but that's the way it's designed. They're in the community to try to interrupt violence before it becomes violence and to work out these issues. And then what he's pointing out, you would have to ask him about what transparency things he's talking about. I think once him and the mayor sit down, they will iron out all the differences and we'll look back at something that really isn't going to be a big deal as we move forward. I know my job isn't going to change. My men and women are continuing to work with the hardworking men and women of the state's attorney's office, because without them prosecuting the cases, we couldn't have the clearance rate. And without Monsey going into the community and violence interrupters, and without going in, because once we do these takedowns, we leave the area. And then it's Monsey's job to come in and settle the area, offer the services, offer all the other things that gets these individuals to put down the guns. So without one spoke in the wheel doesn't ride correctly. So I think we'll all get together again and we'll continue to push forward to make 2026 even better than 2025.
Of course, there's another violence interrupting organization called ROCA. People often mention ROCA and Safe Streets in the same breath, although they do very different things. They operate under different premises and they have a very different modus operandi, as I mentioned. And ROCA is something that actually the training that ROCA does with their clients is something that the police department itself has adapted for training with your department. What's that similarity?
ROCA is fabulous because what it does, it teaches basically de-escalation. It teaches us how to deal with teaches everyone how to deal with conflict. When they first came here, I worked with Molly. And
this is Molly Baldwin,
yes.
Who's now in Boston, who grew up here in Baltimore, who is the founder of ROCA, which means rock in Spanish.
Yes.
And it's all about rewiring the brain.
Yes. And when they told me what they were going to do, I thought there's no way that's going to work. And I have been pleasantly surprised at how well it has worked. And the reason it works is because the people in ROCA are resilient. They do not give up. If you tell them, no, I don't want to deal with you, they'll be back at your house the next day. And they just keep going after these young people who have the possibility to change their lives. And they've changed so many lives. That's part of the reason why things are going the way they are. They are a violence interrupter simply because they get sometimes in the same building two individuals who may want to shoot each other or have had disputes in the past. And they try to iron these things out. And they, without them quashing a lot of these issues with these young people, we wouldn't be able to do the things that we're doing. So they are an extremely important part, another spoke in the wheel. So it's all the spokes have to be in the wheel for the wheel to ride straight. And that's exactly what we're going to continue to do in 2026.
Baltimore City Police Commissioner Richard Worley is my guest. It's midday, 410-662-8780, or if you want to email, it's midday@wypr.org. Let's go to the lines. I'm not quite sure who's there. Oh, he doesn't want to be on the air, I'm told, but we have a caller who says that he grew up in Baltimore in the 40s and 50s, and he wonders what happened to the police boys club. There used to be a police recreation
yes, there was.
League, and you know that.
Yeah. I believe it or not, that was still when I was young. I was in the police boys club in the 70s with Officer Jess, right at the building that's on Calhoun Street right now that used to be the Southwest Police Station. Unfortunately, with a lot of things, budget, it went from the police boys club to PAL, and then in I think it was 2005, 2004, somewhere in there, PAL was disbanded.
That's the police athletic league,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
PAL was disbanded. A lot of the facilities closed down, but now we're starting to open up. We're not. The mayor is opening up some more rec centers, building new rec centers, and our community policing model is now basically going to replace the PAL officers. We have neighborhood coordination officers in every district who have done a fabulous job of re-energizing our, used to be an explorer program, now it's called junior cadets. All of that and the cadet program had all fallen off during COVID. Now we're up, I think we're up to over 90 junior cadets throughout the city and 20 some cadets. And what that does, a junior cadet basically goes, I think it's from 12 until 19, but at 18 you can transition into a cadet. And that means you're moving, you've hired by the police department, you're earning a salary as a cadet, And then at 20 years and 6 months, you can become a police officer, go into the academy, and you become a police officer. We've had 7 individuals do that already. I know that's not a lot, but that's pretty good for a program that just started. And I have Chief Lisa Reynolds, who came from the Department of Juvenile Services, running that program with Major Jenkins from the Northern. And we've done a great job with all the neighborhood coordination officers, getting our young people back out there and into involved with relationships with the cops.
And there's been generations of people here in our city whose relationship with the cops was horrible.
Yes.
You know, it just was. And, of course, you know, we mentioned the consent decree, which is now in its ninth year, whatever it is, which is trying to address that very thing. And it does seem like a lot of progress is being made in terms of trust with the community. You mentioned that Metro Crime Stoppers has many more calls and tips from people in the community. I mean, that does seem to be an indication that that relationship is on its way to being repaired.
Yes, it is. And one of the things I look at, we have a text chain that all rare crimes and handgun and good arrests are put on. And I'm seeing more and more often now that the officers are getting a call from a citizen that somebody's armed with a weapon. And we go and stop them and to investigate, and lo and behold, they have a weapon. So I think it's changing. It's going to take a while. I mean, a lot of people still don't have a ton of cooperation, but the community is changing. That's why the city is getting better, because no matter how much we work, or anyone, any city or state or federal agency, if the community doesn't believe in the work that you're doing, you're not going to be successful. And I think right now, since we've had the consent decree and we've made the changes that we've made, and our officers are proving every single day that this is a different department than it was 3 years, 5 years, 10 years ago. And at no point did I think that agencies from around the country and world would ever be coming to BPD to see how we're doing things. But that's happening almost weekly, with other agencies coming, looking at us, how we've been able to reform a police department and lower crime. And it's not done. We still got it. Several years to go. And even when we do satisfy the consent decree, that doesn't mean we're going to go back to the way we used to do things. This has proven that it's been successful.
Yeah, this is really a cultural change that,
yes,
you know, you and your predecessor, you know, work very hard on. And it's changing that culture is not easy, and changing it on the street isn't easy. So, you know, regardless of the fact that, you know, Mayor Scott, State's Attorney Bates, you know, may have disagreements about this thing or the other thing. And by the way, I talked to the mayor about this. He says that a meeting is going to happen sometime in the next couple of weeks. Mr. Bates has declined to be on the show to talk about it, but we'll talk to him eventually about it. The other issue here is that federal funding for things like violence interruption has been cut off, as well as federal funding for programs like Medicaid. And people's mental health, people's physical health, those are all related to the potential for crime and general nefarious activity to happen. So how are you dealing with the financial dimension of this, the financial cuts that are coming both from the feds? Are they as deep as you expected they were going to be? Where does that stand in terms of funding these programs that you know, you found so important?
Well, as far as with the police department, it really hasn't affected us too much. A lot of the funding that we were getting, we're still getting, and I don't know how it affects the violence interrupters, to be honest. You'd have to probably talk to Director Mravoronis about that, or the mayor, because I'm not familiar with how that funding works with them. I'm concerned.
Part of it was ARPA funding, which
right.
is just a one-time thing.
Right.
Part of it's federal funding that was announced in July, but you know, may or may not have actually gone through as of now.
The ARPA funding we use to purchase cars.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of our take-home vehicle program. And we're going to continue to purchase cars. We just have to realign our budget a little bit if we have to. But the Governor Moore has been a fabulous supporter of ours. He's given us a good sum of money for the last couple years that he's been in office, that we would not be able to do the things that we've done without the support from his office to put more people on the street, police presence on the street, because of the millions of dollars that they've given us. So we'll keep pushing forward. My men and women are resilient. I just tell them, what we want to do and why. That's the big thing with the young officers now. You got to tell them why you're doing something, but they will go out and accomplish anything. And if we continue to all work together, and I know this dispute between the mayor and the state's attorney will be done as soon as they meet, and we'll continue to push forward to make Baltimore safer in 2026 than 2025.
And it was last spring, actually, that the DOJ, this is in April, DOJ canceled about $800 million that was issued previously by the Office of Justice Programs. It totals about 360 ongoing grants to work for violence reduction, violence interruption, and this is across the country. So, you know, it's not just here in Baltimore. We are going to take a break, and I'll tell you why. It's because I said so. And when we come back, we're going to talk more with Baltimore City Police Commissioner Richard Worley. He's with us until the top of the hour. If you want to join us, we're at 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Stay with us.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, my guest is Baltimore City Police Commissioner Richard Worley. He's here in Studio A. You are welcome to join us as well. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. And before we continue with Commissioner Worley, I want to share with you some breaking news. Maryland federal judge Paula Zinnes today granted Kilmar Abrego Garcia's request to be released from ICE custody. He's a native of El Salvador and a resident of Maryland. He's become a symbol of the Trump administration's policy of mass deportations after he was mistakenly sent to a prison in El Salvador in the spring. Contrary to a judge's order, the government later returned him to the United States but immediately charged him in a Tennessee case with human smuggling. Judge Zinnes said the government had no final removal order to deport Abrego Garcia and despite that tried to deport him to various countries in Africa without any reasoning, even as Abrego Garcia was willing to leave the U.S. and go to Costa Rica. So respondents' conduct over the past several months belie that his detention has been for the basic purpose of effectuating removal, lending further support that Abrego Garcia should be held no longer. That's what the judge wrote. So Abrego Garcia had been in ICE custody since last August while various court battles played out, and he still faces conditions on his release as part of the criminal charges in Tennessee. And NPR will have more on that story this afternoon on All Things Considered. Commissioner, recruitment for the Baltimore City Police Department is up. You mentioned that they have this cadet program that's, you know, yielded seven people who've gone through the process of becoming certified police officers, sworn police officers. That's good news as well, because you've been saying that you need more officers. Where do things stand? How many short are we still?
We're still about 500 short. The good thing is our recruitment for sworn hires are up 50%. Cadet hiring cadets is up 100%. Now, that's not a huge number, but the sworn hires, right now we have over 160 officers in the academy that will graduate hopefully within the next 6 months, because we were delayed a little bit with the range and the shutdown of the federal government as far as qualifications. But within the next 3 to 4 months and by June, we should have all 160 so of those officers graduated. They won't be completely certified, but I want to move to 12-hour shifts in 2027, and I've got to negotiate.
And how does that help?
We need, before we can move to 12-hour shifts, I need at least 125 more police officers in patrol, because I will not go to 12-hour shifts if we can't staff it every single day without overtime. Because forcing someone to work, it cannot happen. I absolutely hate when we have to draft people and make them work when they don't want to work. So I have to have patrol completely full in order to switch to 12-hour shifts.
And so why are 12-hour shifts better than the current system?
Well, what it does, first of all, the officers will be off more than half the year. When they do their work, they'll work 12-hour shifts. A lot of them are here that long anyway because of overtime. But one of the big issues with them, that helps is that now their sergeants only work with their officers a couple of days a week. Sergeants, lieutenant, officers will all be working together the same days on, the same days off. We need more lieutenants.
So a normal schedule for a beat cop at a 12-hour shift schedule would be 3 days at 12-hour shift.
Yeah, usually it's two. There's a couple of them that are out there, but it's usually like two on, two off, three on, three off. That's the way it usually goes. So the good thing is you're off half the year already, even before you put in your leave. And I think we have to open it up and negotiate with the union, because I have to make sure that they're happy with that we can staff it. And I will not do it unless I have the staffing in place. So that's my goal. And we probably have to have that in place by September in order to be able to move it into 2027. And if it's not, then we try for 2028. But I'm confident with the
amount. So putatively, this will cut way down on overtime.
Yes, it'll cut down on all over.
At least theoretically.
It should cut down, not all, but it'll cut down on a good amount of our patrol overtime. And that would go down a little bit anyway because our numbers are coming in. But the 12 hours allows us to have less officers on that patrol shift, because what we're going to have too is we will have an overlapping shift that'll cover the high time. So it'll work out really well for the officers. I mean, obviously not everybody is going to like it, but the majority of them, we've already did a poll where they would like to have the 12-hour shifts. So we'll see how it works. But I work with the union. We've been doing a lot of work with the union to try to get rid of a lot of the things that were bothering officers to try to raise morale, and we'll continue to do that. I've got a good relationship with President Mancuso and the union, and my team works well together with them to make the city safer and the job for the officers better.
There is an officer, Robert A. Parks, who's been suspended several weeks ago. A video circulated online showing that he was chasing somebody with a car. He was in the car driving after a guy who was running away from him. He's been suspended. Tell us where the status of that case is, and tell us how that kind of incident affects recruitment, affects morale in the department, and affects, you know, the community's relationship with the police.
The biggest thing that I'm worried about, that I worry about on that, is how it affects the relationship with the community, because we have worked tirelessly to build a relationship with a lot of the community, and this one act can harm a lot of it. The good thing is that we dealt with it quickly. The officer was suspended with pay, because according to the law, we cannot suspend him without pay until he's charged with the crime. So he's suspended with pay, and then when he was charged with the crime, he was suspended without pay. And then now we let the criminal justice system to go, and he'll get his day in court. When I looked at it, I'm like, man, this is, that is not what we teach our police officers to do. I don't know.
He'd been with the department about 5 years. He joined in 2020.
I don't know what caused him to do that. I don't want to speculate, but that is definitely not how we want our officers to behave. And we will deal with it, and we'll be transparent when we deal with it. But now we've done it. We've done what we can. The part now goes to the prosecution from the state's attorney, and then we'll see what happens in court. And then once that's done, we'll make a decision. But that is definitely not the way we want the citizens to portray our behavior. And I think we've done a lot of good things that know that that's not the way we want our officers. Now, morale, I don't think it affected morale, because I don't think there's very many police officers out there that thought that was a smart move or a good move. And I think that we're to that point now where the officers look at it and are like, yeah, that's not what we do.
Because it's interesting, when we've talked in the past, you've said that morale is one of your biggest concerns. Juvenile crime, another big concern, because there are kids, as you mentioned earlier in the show today, that, you know, there's a lot of kids not getting prosecuted. And when they do get prosecuted, they seem to resurface in some cases. And then the relationship with the community. So when an incident like this happens, what are your senior staff folks talking about? What are the folks, the beat cops on the street talking about, you mentioned that they say this doesn't look like a smart move. I mean, that's pretty apparent to anybody who sees the video. But how does it really affect deep down, you know, in the sort of the sinew of the department, how people approach their job and how people assume the community is going to approach them?
I think most of our cops, we've trained them well enough to know that when they saw it, they were like, most of them were probably just like me, like, man, that's not good. And they shook their head and they're like, and then you try to make sure the community knows that's not what we do. And 99% of the police out there go out there and do a fabulous job, and they will continue to do it. But we have 2,050 officers. Some of them are going to make some mistakes, and that's just inevitable in every profession.
22,000?
No, 2,051.
2,000, yeah.
I wish we had 22,000.
Yeah.
2,051 officers. So there's bound to be some officers that make mistakes, and when the biggest thing we have to do is when someone makes an egregious mistake like this, or does an egregious act like this, is we handle it, and we be as transparent as we can. That's why when it happened, people were in an uproar because we suspended him with pay. But that's the law. You have to follow the law. And we even put that out to show what happens. And then he's just like everyone else. I mean, he gets his day in court to plead his case and see if he was found guilty, if he gets found guilty or not guilty. And then we'll deal with it after that. But I think we've done enough We've got a lot of work to do with the community, but we've done a lot. And I know you brought up the juvenile issue. I met with Betsy Tolentino.
Yeah, Betsy Fox Tolentino is the newish head of DJS.
We have a really good relationship. I've known her for years. I think she will turn things around there. I think she'll get things moving in the right direction. It's just going to take time. I think there's things wrong there that she didn't realize she was coming into, and it's going to take her some time to get her people in the right seats and to get things going the way she wants them to go, but I think we're headed in the right direction.
Interesting. And her most recent direct experience has been with, of all places, ROCA. Yeah, she was working with that violence interruption group. Richard Worley is the commissioner of the Baltimore City Police Department. Commissioner, it's always good to see you. Happy holidays, and I hope your recovery goes on apace.
Happy holidays. Thank you for having me.
And that's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, the sports writer Jane Levy will talk about her hilarious and provocative new book. It's called Make Me Commissioner. I Know What's Wrong with Baseball and How to Fix It. This is a book you should read, Commissioner, because you're a baseball aficionado yourself. Plus, tomorrow, J. Wynn Russick will review Santa Claus is Coming, a Motown Christmas review. Fresh Air is up next. Speaking of sports, today the guests are sports journalist Sam Smith and the legendary NBA coach Phil Jackson. They've written a new book, and they'll talk about it after the news at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.